I'd first of all like to say thank you to Ton and for hosting this event, and I think it's a great opportunity. And excuse me. First of all, my name is William Reynish, and I work at a company called Tonic in Copenhagen, and I also worked doing character animation on Big Buck Bunny last year. So I have a fair amount of experience using Blender for various projects, various 3D related things. This talk is going to be about the user interface and about the past, present, and also where we can take the Blender user interface moving into the future. All right. I also want to start off by mentioning that this isn't meant to be another UI ramble, and there's been loads of discussions about the Blender user interface throughout the years, and this is not just going to be pointing out some things that could be better, but actually also providing some solutions. So hopefully that will help as well. I want to start off by saying that really the Blender user interface is great. This is a screenshot of the latest version of Blender 2.48, and this is a project I'm just finished working on. And as you can see, it's very flexible. You can do all these sorts of things at the same time, and it's very customizable and allows the user to really use it in many ways. The next thing here is a screenshot of an application called Modo, and in fact Blender's user interface is so good that other applications have, if not copied, then certainly gotten some ideas from Blender. And you'll see that Luxology's Modo has the same subdivision based user interface and many of the same ideas and elements. Right? This is the latest version of Photoshop that was released this past week, and this new version also features a non-overlapping user interface, also subdivision-based, and is much more like the Blender we know. This is another example, an application called Motion from Apple, and it also employs many of the ideas in Blender. So, but actually it goes even further than just, you know, using a subdivision-based user interface. Even some details, like this is like a dashboard panel in Motion, and it looks very much like the sort of floating panels that we have in Blender. Very much the same design. Also, these are the widgets that you use in Motion to change values around, and as you'll see, they look very much like the widgets in Blender. This is an example. You can drag this. It works exactly the same in Motion. In fact, you can drag the buttons left and right or type in numerically a value.
They copied it.
Yeah, exactly. They did. So this really shows how strong Blender's user interface is. So there are a lot of great things about it, right? I'm going to start off by talking about the main aspects of the Blender user interface that are really great and that we should definitely keep. First of all, it's subdivision based. But many other applications, you have multiple windows and they overlap each other, and to be able to interact with it, you need to move the windows around and you can't find what you're doing. You spend more time managing the windows than actually working on your projects. So instead of having all these thousands of windows, you just have one window that's subdivided, it's clean, you can see everything at a glance, and it's just much better. It's also relatively non-modal, and this is something that I know Ton talks a lot about and strives to do and thought about when he did the user interface for the original Blender, is to make it as non-modal as possible. So if you go in Blender to change the material settings of an object, in some other applications you might get like a window that covers the screen that lets you change the material properties, and then you press OK and then they take effect. And that's modal workflow, because that takes you out of what you're doing. It lets you change the material and then puts you back into Blender. So it puts you into a different mode. And that's bad for a number of reasons, because it takes you out of your flow of thought, and you have to think about the application, and you have to use it in the way that they've specified. So instead of doing this, Blender gives you a buttons window where you can change material settings on the fly, and when you make changes, you'll see them update immediately. So there's no need for like a huge window that blocks everything or to press OK, and it's just much more intuitive and flexible as well. And again, you can be doing all these things at the same time. Is it better? Loud enough? Okay. All right. The other thing is you can be doing all these things at the same time. So you can be adjusting the material, doing your modeling over here, UV unwrapping, compositing, and editing your animation curves at the very same time. Other applications, some of them at least, sort of put you into different rooms, and you can only do sort of one thing at a time. But in Blender, you can do it just however you want. If you have a workflow that requires you to do some of these things at the same time, you can. And Blender uses the object action model, which means that you start by selecting an object, and then you perform an action onto it. When you think about it, that's actually opposite to like an application like Photoshop, where you start by selecting the action or the tool, and then you start doing things with it. So Blender's the other way around, and that's good because it also makes it more non-modal, so that you don't have to think about what tool mode you're in as you would in Photoshop. You just select the object and perform the action you want to do. Much better. All right. Next thing is consistency. Blender's very consistent as well. For example, you all know in the 3D view to move objects around, scale them, and rotate them. You use G, S, and R on the keyboard, right? And in the action editor, you use the same tools as well. And also in the UV editor and other editors. So the same conventions are used over and over again. And it makes it much easier to learn the entire program once you've just learned one aspect. So consistency, very important. Blender's also completely cross-platform, so it works on any type of operating system you're using, and you'll know that if you used it on Linux, it'll look exactly the same on a Mac or on Windows. So that makes it very easy to work in multi-platform environments, and that's important as well. All right. It's not perfect, though. Here's the panel. It's in the mesh editing window. And I don't know where to start, really. If we bring over the mesh editing menu, you get some mesh actions. But over on the window, we get some other mesh actions, and some of them overlap, and some of them don't. And there's some very confusing things going on here. I can go on, like you can see there's a thing saying rem doubles, remove doubles, and the little limit thing controls how close it removes vertices close to it. But there's no way of knowing that it relates to the remove doubles. It could just as well relate to this smoothing, like how far away does it smooth, but it doesn't, and there's no way of knowing it. So there's some strange inconsistency going on here. So that's something. The other thing here, I'm using the same window as an example, is that we have multiple things going on here. At the top, we have some settings for the object. We can set the auto smooth value and a few other things to do with UV textures. Then we have some tools that we can use to edit our objects. And then we have some tool settings. Sorry. These things are mixed together in a way that it makes it counterproductive because it's quite unorganized, as I pointed out before. So there's a lot of stuff you could clean up here. Also, if you have multiple objects, Blender's really designed to work on one object at a time. And that's fine if you have like three objects, right? But what if you have like this many? There are ways you can sort of, if you want to change the property, you can some properties you can copy, but some you can't. And some other things you can link, but what if you only want to copy like one single property? Like some you can copy the whole material and make sure that they are synced across all these objects. What if you only want to change one value? There's no easy way to do that. So this is probably overly complicated. It's really, it doesn't need to be that complicated to change a value across multiple objects. All right. But of course, the reason why all these things aren't perfect, at least part of it, is that Blender wasn't actually designed for what it is today. This over on the left is, I think, Blender's original logo. I think so, yeah. And I don't know. That wasn't even, oh, it's not the original one then. Okay. Well, is it? Oh, okay. Of course. And it was designed, I think, as an in-house tool for an animation studio. And the design probably also was born out of that. And it wasn't really meant probably for general use as it is used today. And so this is why this next thing is very important, right? Blender 2.5. Ton has been talking about this morning, and you know, I think this is very exciting because as far as I know, as far as I understand, 2.5 requires almost a complete rewrite of some of the basic things in Blender. So, right. So this is our chance. Our chance. Right? Now, when we're rethinking the basics of Blender are being rewritten to be more flexible, now is a perfect time to go back and rethink some aspects of the user interface. Because we're changing some things anyway, we might as well, if people are going to relearn aspects of Blender, we might as well just put a few more changes in there. Because change is actually something we have to embrace. And I know there's been some resistance in the Blender community. You know, people, I think, are very happy about some things in the Blender interface and maybe are scared that some of the good aspects might go away if things are changed. But we have to embrace the notion that things probably do have to change in order for Blender to truly move forward. But before I go into that, I want to give you a very brief history of the Blender user interface. I'm using Ton. And this is this era. He had white or yellow hair at that time. At one point in this period, anyway. And this is like the Blender 2.0 user interface, I think. And so this is more or less what it looked like in its original design. More or less. And as you can see, it's very simple. And it was already, at that time, it was fast. But it was also quite fixed. It wasn't as customizable as it is now. There were no panels to move around. All the buttons were fixed in the user interface. It was also very hidden, and it was only based around the use of hotkeys. So if you didn't know a hotkey for a function, there's no other way of knowing it. You had to look it up or know it or something. There's no way to learn it by just using it. You just had to know. And so it was also, there were some things that were extremely obscure. And again, I think this has to do with the fact that it was made as an in-house tool and then suddenly made public. So it wasn't meant to be sort of easy to learn or anything like that. It was meant to be just a quick tool that that the artist in this particular studio could use. All right, this is a. I'm just zooming in on this user interface here, and you'll see that all the buttons look exactly alike. So there's no way to distinguish that. For example, the one saying 100%, right? There's no way to know that that's a radio button. So when you click 50%, 100% will be deselected. You can only have one of those selected at a time. So that's a radio button. And OSA over here enables the buttons underneath. So if you don't have OSA pressed, the buttons underneath have no relevance. But that's not really communicated either. Then this is the next era, 2003 and up until today. And this is Ton in his famous room jacket. Yeah. Do you have it with you today?
No.
Ah. All right. And this is the current user interface, Blender 2.48. And there have been a number of changes since what you saw first. First of all, we have panels in the buttons window, which allowed for many more buttons and many more things that could be crammed into the user interface. We also had tabs in the panels themselves that where you can dock and do all kinds of things. Also menus, so if you didn't know a hotkey, you could look it up in a menu, or you could also use the menu to invoke the action. It's probably best to just learn the hotkey because it's faster, but at least you can look it up in the menu now. There's a way to find out. It also became a lot more customizable because you could do all kinds of things, move things around that you couldn't before, even change colors. People, for some reason, spend a lot of time doing these different colored themes, which I think is interesting. And there's also now a clearer visual distinction between the buttons. So for example, now, there wasn't before, if in the little degree slider here, there's some arrows on the sides that sort of indicate that it's a value that you can drag. And if you click the little arrows, it'll just increment it by one. And if you click the middle, you can type the value numerically. So that's easier to use. And you can much easier see what's going on. There's also been some grouping added. So for example, you can see that the degree slider or number button relates to the auto smooth button above it. So there's some grouping. Much of the grouping, though, isn't really consistent, but at least there is some grouping. For example, like up in the vertex groups, I mean, they're all related, and you can discuss like exactly how it's done, but at least it's there, and that helps communicate. So now, I don't know why exactly what it can look like, but what should we do for the future? Well, we should make sure that we build a strong foundation, something that doesn't need to be changed in a short while. Something that a good system that really works and can be expanded upon that works well in that way. We also need to think about the buttons window. To separate the tools and the properties and the tool settings. And these are different things, and right now they're sort of crammed together and sort of just put there, but really they should be treated as different things. Also, providing clear visual feedback is very important and something that can be done much better. Blender isn't all that good at communicating to the user what's going on. So these are just examples. You could have like more cursor type, so that when you're doing a color pick, you can actually see that you're doing that. And when you're sculpting, you could change. But in many more ways than that, you could communicate to the user what's going on. That's very important. And the other thing is ease of use. As Blender becomes more and more popular, and like you said, Ton, it's being used in many studios all around the world, ease of use becomes more and more important as there are more and more people using it. And this won't only help beginners, because making it easier to use also helps pros, because professional people don't only work in Blender, they have multiple tools, and they'll be jumping back and forth between Blender and other tools, and if they always have to sort of think twice about whenever they're using Blender because things aren't so intuitive as they could be, or quite so optimal, then their productivity will suffer a little bit. So ease of use, I think, is important, and I do believe it can be done. You can increase the ease of use without making it any less professional or without dumbing it down. It's definitely not the same thing. But before we actually go out and talk about specific things that we want to do for the user interface, we have to agree probably on just a few ideals. The first is non-modality, as we talked about in the beginning. And I think most people agree that that's something to strive for, to make sure that you can do whatever you like at the same time as you're doing something else, and not being forced into some kind of a mode is important. And again, a non-linear workflow, so you can do things in whatever order you would like. An open-ended user interface. So the ideal here is that you offer, you know, a few building blocks. That means you have not so much to learn, but to make those building blocks flexible and to make them usable for many things. And also to increase, make it more logical and keep it at least as fast as it is as possible, so you can move around and do things very quickly. You also need to make sure that it keeps on being flexible and adjust to the user and not the other way around. And also, I think Blender has a kind of a, and this is probably because of Ton, it has, he doesn't have a lot of respect for, like, other applications and what they do. And what the kind of norm, the status quo, absolutely no respect for those sorts of things. Instead, he thinks it's much more interesting to think about alternate ways of doing things, like, wouldn't it be cool if you have, like, 3 mice attached to your computer, and they were all controlling Blender some way, and all these, Blender has all these crazy ideas that no one has ever done before, and so Blender's always had sort of innovation over familiarity, and I think that's a good thing. I think it should keep sort of innovating and not really think too much about what other applications are doing. But there's been sort of a notion, I think, that whenever someone's mentioned a user interface problem or something that could be better, there's a kind of a standard answer. Unfortunately, there's been sort of we can make this customizable, right? We can say, okay, well you can have a preference for it, or the user can sort of set it up like he would, but I think customizability is very important, and it allows you to set things up in different ways, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the application is more flexible. Like, for example, the changing of colors, I mean, it's cool, but it doesn't really help you in any way. It also doesn't usually solve the problem, and it's important to, if you want to make something more customizable, you at least have to be very careful about thinking about the defaults, because 98% of Blender users will use Blender as it ships. And they probably won't make their own .blend file and figure out how to do that. They'll probably just use it as it ships. So it doesn't matter if you can do all these cool things after you've customized them if it doesn't work as it should or optimally out of the box. It's good to have customization, and it's good for many users, but it doesn't solve any sort of usability problems, I don't think. All right. So now I'm going to talk about a few more, get more specific, and talk about properties in Blender. So this is a current panel in the buttons window, and like I said before, I'll just blow it up. And I've already talked about this. You've seen it before. Again, there are some tools like this spin and spin dupe and screw commands. And some of these things just underneath them relate to the buttons above them, and some of them don't. And there are some strange things going on here. I don't think is that good. In fact, I think it's really bad. And this is something that can be improved. And I think there are multiple reasons why the user interface here is so bad. But one of them, at least, I think, is because of a rule that the panels obey in Blender, which is that the panels have to be square, because historically you've been using a horizontal buttons layout, and so the buttons were just spread across the bottom horizontally. But then the vertical buttons layout solution was added, but we also wanted panels, and so for them to be able to work both horizontally and vertically, they had to be square. I have some slides showing that there. So this is, like, if you have it horizontally, you can have panels along the bottom. And if this is vertically, then you have them again here, and they can be stacked vertically. And that sounds like a good idea. But what if you have, like, several categories of buttons? What if one has, like, really few and one has really many? Well, what do you do? And so this one has many controls. And so what's happened is that the programmers, probably coding Blender, have tried to find, like, space in the user interface where there aren't any buttons to put things, but not had maybe so much time to think about, what made optimal sense. And so you get, like, many of the panels are just a mess, to be honest. And it's just so. But how can we solve this, though? Because there's things are just crammed together. Wouldn't it be great, though, if you had, like, some panels that need lots of buttons and some that need a few buttons? Wouldn't it be great if you could do this? That makes much more sense, because then you can really space things and make things really clear and nice and think about organizing things logically. And that means introducing a variable height. It also means that if you add another button to the bottom of a panel, you don't have to make all the other buttons that they're already smaller. You can just make the panel just a little bit longer, right? And that means it's ready for the future. But it also means that really this won't work in a horizontal layout, because they have different height, and so it means that you have to sacrifice the horizontal buttons to do this. That's right. So we might have to put the horizontal buttons in there. And I know lots of people who are used to using the buttons horizontally. But probably, if you think about it, having them vertically makes a lot of sense for the future. And just as Ton talked about, most computer screens these days are widescreen compared to when Blender originally shipped. And that means if you add a buttons window on the side and have the 3D view here, for example, the 3D view is still fairly square, whereas if you have it along the bottom, the 3D view is incredibly becomes super widescreen, and that's kind of a little bit of a weird ratio to look at things. So actually having a vertical buttons window makes sense, I think. All right, and Blender's current buttons window includes multiple categories of things. It includes tools, like some of the ones we see here. It includes some tool settings that apply to the tools that you're currently using. It includes some actions, like if you want to center things or perform certain things. And it also includes some properties, like material properties and other things that you can change. And currently, all these sorts of things, all these different categories of things, they go into one bucket that's called the buttons window. And the buttons window is just a great name because it really means it's just stuff. It's just buttons. I mean, there's nothing. And that means that this is just, it's just, yeah. That doesn't really tell you anything, though. But really, these different types of things have different, they're different things. Like tools is an action that has some settings to it, probably, that relate to the tool. And properties are all things that can be animated over time, or at least will be. They all have animatable values, and you can insert keyframes for them, and so on. And actions, they're like commands that you perform, like a one-time thing, like okay, I want to center this, or I want to do other things like that. Well, a tool, I'll come to that in a minute, but a tool is, I guess, has some, can be active for a while. You see what I mean? So if you're using the loop cut tool, it's active. It's not just a loop cut. It takes a while to perform because it has a number of options and a number of things related to it. But the distinction is a little bit blurred, I agree. But maybe you should make it less blurred. Yeah. Not at all, yeah. Yeah. So it would be great if we put these things in some different buckets instead. So... So this is like a mock-up, and you can, for the moment, sort of disregard the sort of graphic design of it. It doesn't, not really that important. You'll see that this is how the property editor, instead of the buttons window, could look. So as you can see, it includes no tools, it includes no actions, but only settings for objects, things that can change over time. All these things you can animate, and they have different categories at the top, as you can see. So basically, my suggestion here for 2.5 is there's no more buttons window, right? The buttons window goes away. Instead, you have a properties panel. The properties panel that let you change all the properties, like you can see here. This is for the like object buttons, object properties at the moment. You can still have like action buttons, like the clear button that sort of clears the rotation. Like the Alt-R command, if you know that in Blender, same thing. So that's still possible. And this is just like an example. Doesn't mean that it should look exactly like this or anything like that. But that's it'll give you an idea about how it could be without any tools, just these properties. And as you can see, they have varied height, and you can still collapse them and so on. Oh, yeah, I have some boxes here, so they're still separate like that, and then you have tools, and they're really separate. I'll just come up with some examples of tools. Right, you have tools that work on the object level, and then you have like sculpt tools, and mesh tools. Right, there are lots of those, things that have to do with curves, and text tools, like there's the text object, but also text in Blender, I guess, and. Basically, most of the tools use the object setting action model in Blender. I'll give you an example of this. Like, for example, with the loop cut tool, you start by selecting your object or vertices you want to perform your action on. Then you say, okay, I want to make a loop cut. And then you say, well, this is how many times I want to cut it. And so you can be like, oh, loop cut, 2, no, 4, no, that wasn't what I wanted. 3, that's what you want. And if you, the same goes for these buttons here, you set the values, right, and then you perform the action. So if you want to like do like a spin, you'll say, well, I don't know how many steps I want before I do it, but you have to decide that beforehand. Also, when you add objects, right, you're asked before the object is added how many segments and rings it has. And that means that usually you want you do as the user, you want to say, okay, I want a sphere, and then I don't care how many vertices it has, I can change that. I should be able to change that afterwards and then decide when I think that's good. So instead of doing the settings before the action, you should do the action before the setting and let you change the settings interactively after you've performed your action. So Blender 2.5 should have a context-sensitive tools system with non-modal settings, right? So I'm going to give you like an example of how this could look. So over on the left, I'll just zoom in on it. Like, you might say, I want to extrude something. But then on the bottom, you have like some tool settings at the bottom that always relate to the tool that's currently active. So if you go to extrude something, you should be able to extrude it and put the end here. And then afterwards, you can decide, well, how many steps do you want in between? You don't have to decide that beforehand. You can decide that afterwards. And it will interactively, you know, insert the vertices as you go. Until, I don't know exactly, the rule can be, for example, until you select the next object, and then it sort of freezes those changes. Or it can be done even more, perhaps cleverly, in a sort of a modifier stack. I don't quite know. There are different ways. Yeah, there are different ways of doing that. But one could be like having a modifier stack that keeps on remembering that even if you then afterwards go and do something else, you can still change the how many steps you have in the extrusion. Those kinds of details can be worked out. There are multiple solutions, but it's very important to be able to move this thing around and let you change the settings after you've performed an action. Oops. All right, so that means you don't have to go back and adjust the settings afterwards. And also another benefit is when you, after you've, for example, done a loop cut or something, you have to sort of say, or adding an object, you have to sort of say, okay, when you're finished. But this system is open-ended. You don't have to accept it. Just make the change. Just like if you change the color of an object from red to green, there's no okay. It just takes effect immediately. And if you really want to change it, if you regret what you've done, you can always undo. But having to press OK all the time, accept, yeah, I accept, is annoying. So there's no need for that. And of course, this system should work on everything. So modeling, sculpting, weight painting, and whatever you can think of for the future. All right. The next thing I want to talk about briefly is context sensitivity. At the moment, this is a screenshot from the current version of Blender. So I have a mesh selected out there. And I can go to the lamp settings, but it's empty because I don't have a lamp selected. So there's nothing there, and so that might be confusing to the user. Well, instead, now that we have the outliner, we can actually use that to do much more easy and clear context. So you can have the outliner just above the properties panel, and then you can select any aspect. So I have the object selected here, and then it jumps to the object panel down here. And you can make your object settings. What happens if you want to adjust the modifiers? Well, if you click modifiers, you get just the modifiers. Or if you select the mesh, you see the mesh and also the underlying properties that relate to, you know, the hierarchy underneath the mesh. All right, so you always see only what you need, and that makes it less confusing, but also optimizes things. So you're always working context sensitivity. All right. The other thing is, like I talked about before, with multiple objects. At the moment, if I want to change a value across these objects, you have to do it one at a time, and it's tedious. There are ways, as I said, you can copy things, but it's not very flexible, and not very easy to use either, because you need to find it and know how to use it. So wouldn't it be great if you could just like change everything at once? And again, this is not a problem with three, but if you have this many, it's really annoying. So here we have like a number button. And I have one object selected. And it shows me here, it's rotated 90 degrees. Well, what if I have multiple objects selected? Well, these things have been thought of before. This is not an original idea. But then you'll see the buttons window shows a dash because it doesn't know they have multiple values. And so to make them all 90 degrees, you simply type in 90 degrees. And so here I have, in the same properties panel, I have multiple objects selected. So they all have the same rotation. They all have the same scale. But they're placed differently, I can see, because they have dashes here in the location. And some of them, this is what it's supposed to show, some of them are set to shaded, and some of them are set to wireframe, right? Because they have the dashes. And some of them have the name on, but all of them have wireframe showing. See what I mean? And then if you want to make them all shaded, you simply click shaded, and they all become shaded. So that's one way to solve the problem of working with multiple objects. And I hope to have some boxes here that show the different sections. And that makes it very easy to go from this to this, make them all blue, if you want to do that, without having to do all fancy things. And in fact, it already works like this for actions. If you want to select multiple objects and say set smooth, which is an action, you can do that with as many objects selected as you want. But if you want to perform a change of value, you can only do that with one object, the active object. And that is a little inflexible. Right? The next thing is visual feedback. So like I talked about before, that you could have more mouse cursors that show what you're currently doing. If you do have to force a mode on the user, it's very difficult to avoid any kind of mode. So if you want to pick a color, you sort of, you can do it as a semi mode, where you sort of just pick and then then select, which doesn't really put you in a mode, but in a way it does. So it's semi mode. That's right. Yeah. But then you can communicate to the user much better what you're actually doing. Also, things that let you wait. Some things, they just take time. The computer has to work on them. Wouldn't it be great if you didn't have to wait for rendering or solving soft body simulations or baking or all these sorts of things? Wouldn't it be great if you could just... But the computers are too slow. But if they are too slow, it's important that we give them an indication about how far they've come along, right? So this can be improved a lot. The Blender currently often uses the terminal window for communicating to the user, but that probably isn't optimal for doing that because it's hidden, and it's fine for kind of a debugging programmer's tool, but it's not really meant to be a part of the application. Next thing is drag and drop. There's no way to drag and drop things. But drag and drop is kind of cool because it resembles physical interaction, right? Because you can say, well, I want to drop something over here. You don't have to think about what tools am I using or anything. Just drag it and put it there. It's like physically moving something on a table. It takes the metaphor from the real world and puts it into the computer. So, for example, if you have an outliner, it'd be cool if you could just apply the material on this object like that, just drag it onto it. Or even like apply the mirror modifier, just drag it there, boink, and it's applied. So that would be another way. You could also obviously do it within the outliner. So if you want to, you know, put the flying squirrel material onto the Gamera character, you can just drag it there as well. Just makes it much easier to use. All right, and the last thing I want to talk about briefly is graphic design. The most important thing in user interface isn't how the button looks, it's how it really works. So this is not the most important thing, but it is still important to communicate effectively to the user what's going on. So the look of the buttons isn't just sort of fluff, it actually also is useful. So this is how a not too far from how number buttons already work, there are a few changes. For example, there's the little thing on the right that lets you increase, and it just shows a little more clearly what it does. When you move it over here, you can edit or drag as you can at the moment. But one thing that would be very useful is if the button is currently inactive, if it doesn't do anything, if you've deselected your object, if you've deselected the tool that enables the button you want to press, then it grades it out like this. It shows you this button is not applicable at the moment. Wouldn't that be great? Also, when you have everything animatable, you need some kind of indication that says, well, this button has a keyframe on this current frame. So it lights up and is green. Obviously, you also need a way to insert a keyframe directly from the panel. So you could do like a control click or some other modifier, click on the button, and then you insert a keyframe for that value. That's one solution. Something that isn't used very much in Blender at the moment is sliders, because you can use the middle mouse button, and that's fine. But there are some good things about sliders, though. And the main one is that, obviously, you can move things around. But the biggest advantage of using a slider is that you can sort of get an overview of how much stuff is outside the current view. So that is very useful for that. And this is some radio buttons, an action button. And I put them on one slide, so now you can see that they all look visually very different. And there's absolutely no doubt the thing at the top is a radio button. When I click any of the other ones, the wire option will be deselected. And that'll be instantly apparent. And I'll put these next to, this is the current version of Blender. You wouldn't know, but on the right side, we have action buttons that set some other buttons when you press them. But on the left side, we have radio buttons and look exactly the same. And that's confusing. All right. And again, I'm just going to bring up this sort of a mock-up that sort of gives you an idea about how things could work. It's not meant to be any way sort of accurate in the specifics, but the general idea. I'm just going to go over some of the main things. So the main things that I suggested here is to separate the properties and the tools and the tool settings into different categories, and to change the object setting action model to an object action setting model, so you can change your settings after you've applied your action. Also, using the outliner, much cleverer for context sensitivity and drag and drop, and allowing editing properties for multiple objects. There's no reason why this shouldn't just work easily. Also, give more visual feedback, especially when you have to wait. It's important to know what's going on. And again, allow drag and drop, and a better distinction between the different elements in the user interface. Now, like I said, this isn't meant to give sort of specifics on how it should absolutely be done. It's just as much meant to give you an idea of something that can be discussed. It's to start a discussion, because this is the right time to begin discussing Blender's user interface for the future. Now that we're doing Blender 2.5, this is the right time to make the changes. So I don't know if anyone has any questions or anything, but... All right, thanks.
Like an actor in the company.
Does anyone have any questions that they absolutely need to know? Or
I mean, obviously, I mean, he's been in the Blender Institute for 6-7 months, so we've been discussing things already. So most of the things he said, either I knew it, or I think he very nicely already put it in what we've been thinking of for doing in Blender 2.5. Some things we didn't solve yet, like the multiple object thing. I don't know yet how to do this, but I agree we have to tackle it. But the things like the way how he describes tools, how they should work. So instead of that, if you have a loop cut, you see that you have to activate the tool, and then you do something, set, you have to undo and go back and do it again. So the unified tool API will make sure that you only need one command, like add a sphere, and then there always will be buttons available for the last issued tool. And it says, okay, this is sphere, subdivision, or all kinds of properties, and you can just change them, and it will be redone for you automatically. So for every tool, you can always give the complete representation in buttons of the tool settings. And it can store it even, or you can get it as a Python script line or whatever, how you want to automate it. But that makes working much faster. And the thing about vertical or horizontal, he's complaining. So other people really attached to horizontal buttons. One, two, only three in the house. Well, so we are working on what we call the data API. Brecht is coding on it. The idea is that we can allow multiple levels of interfaces. In the lowest level is something we can call list view. This will be a totally automatic generated interface on a developer level, showing all the properties and everything that's related to it. We need that. We need to be able to show, to see all the data. You can use that, but it will be very ugly because it shows everything. Then on top of that, and we have to design it still, but it will happen probably in Python, you can have interface design. Because then you can group things logically. Or you can even say, well, if it's Python, I can make a beginner version of the interface, or I only allow the properties I'm interested in, or no, I want to have the all the radiosity options together and the ray tracing options together. Somebody else says, no, I want to have all the color things in one panel.
Some of the defaults.
Yeah. But this Python level means it's flexible. Of course, we have to design something really good, but that's a second action. So if a developer adds something, it will always be in the list view. So if you add 10 more properties, no problem. You can always find them, but you have to wait for the interface team to find the logical place for that. And if needed, I mean, list is easier, but somebody can also still try to find ways to keep it working horizontally, which is far more difficult, I know. The problem is that you cannot extend horizontal easy. It disappears too quick. And at the moment, like for example, texture channels, like material properties, which you can apply a texture on, the reason why we don't add more is because there's no space. There's no button space. The same is for the passes under. The whole button panel is full. So people say, can I have a couple of more passes? No, there's no space. So before you can do that, you have to redesign the whole system, and then you can add more passes. Everybody gets tired to say, nah, leave it. So we have to solve that. You need a way to very easily extend things without bothering too many people with it. So that was my quick remark. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, I would like to say I'm agreeing with the context sensitivity issue. I think if it could be possible to reuse some panels, even if you are in sculpting, for example, and you want to set brush, you don't have to go to the texture button to just make a panel, the texture panel button show up in the sculpt, because in the mesh tool, the mesh panel, I think there's a lot of going back and forth now.
Yeah.
Because the way I see it, it's not. I just see the tools. The panels that I'm going to use. I'm not seeing that I'm in the mesh panel now, and I'm just seeing a settings area. And I'm working, I want to have my tools in the settings area. I don't have to think about, oh, this is a texture thing. I have to be in the texture panel and change. So I'm agreeing with the much more context sensitivity. I would think that would
Yeah, I think it's important that we don't want as so many modes, but if we do, for example, with the sculpt mode, need to make it very clear that you are in sculpt mode, and also to remove the things that aren't applicable, because it just adds confusion and stuff.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Keeping the focus on the work, and even if the thing you want to change is located somewhere else, just bring that to you instead of you have to go to that.
That's right.
That.
Good point. Any other?
I completely agree that you say defaults should be sane, but I would like to go one step further. I mean, they should be designed so well that as a casual user, it's hardly to improve them. So if you start to customize, then you see the default is much better than what you do yourself.
I'm not one, I think it's fine that it's possible. I'm not one for the kind of making a children's version of Blender and a space scientist version of Blender. I think it's good to have like one version that is really flexible and easy to use, and that's the challenge, but I think it's possible. So like you say, it's important that the defaults are very good. The idea breaks. Any other questions?
Maybe some suggestions. I agree with the horizontality of buttons, because, for example, for an I find an external coherence with other applications, and of course we have we still have square monitors. So I think. It's my attitude to see horizontal buttons, so I like them. Okay. Second, I want to suggest some use of colors. Yeah. I'm wondering why you don't take in consideration some use of colors for a better comprehension of the interface especially by noobs. Okay, because the interface is so gray, not for me, because I know it, but for people I'm teaching to,
right.
It's very gray. So maybe the distinction you are going to work on, like the distinction of tools, tool settings, and actions. I think you could take in consideration the use of colors, for example, for the tab title, like something like the browsers are doing today.
Well, if you don't mind, I'll talk briefly about colors, like you brought it up. And one thing you can say about colors is that it's good to keep it somewhat at a minimum, because you shouldn't have the user interface distract you from the actual work you're doing. The colors probably should be minimal at the defaults, but it's also interesting, like you say, to use color to really communicate things to the user. Currently, there are some colors in the buttons, but they don't really mean anything useful. You can't use it to make any sort of assumptions, and they just sort of add clutter.
Yes, we should pay attention to use color because we could go into confusion. Okay.
That's right. But here is an example of color that's used very well. This is Modo, and you can't really see it. But over on the left, you have the tools, right? And they've used color in the icons for the tools in an incredibly smart way, the thing at the top. And it's very, very smart because in the little icon for extrude, for example, the newly generated vertices are green. So you can always see from the icon that green represents new vertices and orange represents modified vertices and so on. So they use color to communicate what the tool you're using does. And I think that's very clever. So using color in that way can be interesting, I think.
Thank you.
I think one of the bad things about the buttons window is also a good thing, and that's that everything is available immediately. I mean, if you're really used to Blender, then it's just click, click. And if you if you're going to separate those buttons and settings into different panels, it's going to add just another click. So be careful not to make it like 3D Studio. But
oh yeah, yeah. I'm not striving to make it like. I'm saying I, but I don't know who I'm.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's a good thing, but be careful. Yeah.
Well, I mean, already, like I've showed with the mesh panel, you know, only some of them are in the buttons window, and some of them are in the menus. So at the moment, we have kind of a weird situation where it's kind of. Maybe it's supposed to be everything, but it's definitely not.
No,
there's so many things that aren't in the buttons window. It's just kind of a small collection of things that people think would be fun to put in there. There's no big idea or thought. I mean, if it really was everything, then maybe you're right. But it isn't.
It's all
the settings basically are there, but a very small subset of the actions. And so, to many users, it will feel like. Much like it does already, because you have all the properties. So you have all the properties, at least.
And I think that the idea of accessing properties by clicking on the icon in the outliner, for example, is also something that would be useful for material editing. So right now I'm with the horizontal menu. I've got the I've go to shading buttons, and then on the right side there's the texture slots. And when I want to change something, I just have to go to the left to the texture button, and then just
so you
go
divide it up the view
back
so
and
you can
forth.
See both things at the same time.
Yes, either that or that I can just access the texture from the material texture slots. So I've got the list of textures, and then control click or whatever, and then it brings me directly to the texture, and then perhaps back by some button.
Well,
or
there's
something.
Some. I haven't talked about the material editor in Blender, but I think there are some things that can definitely be improved there in the way that that works, especially, like you say, jumping back and forth between the textures and the materials. And there are so many settings in the material properties. I mean, I like the idea of having it completely node-based instead, because then you really have it in at the same level, and you can combine things however you want.
Yeah.
And you just by using a few building blocks, you can set it up, and you only see the buttons that you need to. Again, it's more context-sensitive.
Yeah.
But that's a bigger thing. It's not only a user interface decision. You have to recode the whole materials. And I mean, there already is basic support for nodes, but it's not really node-based. It's more of a material mixer than the material creator, the node materials.
Mm.
It's not really a shading system. So if, I mean, definitely things to improve there, I agree. But
one thing I would like to show you, what people want to have configurable interfaces, a user preset. Typically, you can easily say, every user preset, you can say, no, don't want that. User presets are stupid. Because they always reveal a weakness in the design. Always. Almost always. And if it's not, then it's not really a user preset, but it's something that's useful to configure. A configuration system is fine. Like, if you can make custom bones in an armature, that's not a user preset. That's part of the toolkit. Mm. Because you want to create a handle to allow to move something in an armature. So those things are fine. So if you can do that for tools to allow configuring, meaning creating on a higher level tools that allow you to do things quicker, that's not a user preset, that's a good configuration. So that's important to separate those two things. And we will do that a lot. That's what the target too. So for buttons, windows, they can become a part of the tool set. So if you want to hide things or group things or make higher level editing possible, you only need to press one button to set the whole material exactly as you want. That's fine. You should be able to do that. You don't need all the 5,000 little shader variables below. Or for a node editing system, node editing is extremely complicated. if you look at current compositing setups, for example. But we also learn now that you can provide tools inside of a note editor, not only for grouping, but maybe in other ways, that a note editing designer can create a higher level interface for the users of the note system. It's just like a rigger for animation. You get a shader, and he's creating all the shaders, and he will reveal parts of that in a very simple and quick to use interface for a user to say, okay, this is the variables which is interesting for me to use, but I don't want to know how you coded this whole shader system. So that's the tool to my tools idea. I also want to, the boss says the lunch has been served. There's great food downstairs, sandwiches, Dutch, but good, from the bakery around the corner of the Blender Institute. So I would like to thank William, give him another applause. And see you back at 1:30.